Hi, and welcome back to Alec Mappa Hot Mess with Matthew Dempsey, psychotherapist, the podcast that's going to save the world one hot mess at a time. I'm Alec Mappa. I'm an actor and comedian, and I'm aging as we speak.
You look beautiful. And I'm Matthew Dempsey. I'm a multicultural counselor and psychotherapist.
So we're talking about aging today.
Yes, we are. Yes. And actually, right before we even started our conversation today, you told me that you thought I was much older than I actually am.
I know.
Am.
And you much were really older. Hurt by that. You were really hurt. I could see that you were insulted by that.
I was not hurt.
You weren't hurt?
No, I wasn't hurt, but I was surprised. I didn't know you were going to say I look older.
Well, when you said 39, I was like, oh, I had no idea you were so young. It surprised me.
How old did you think I was? What was the number?
Here's the thing. Matthew, we've been talking on the podcast for nearly a year now, but you and I haven't hung out in real life. Like, I want to hang out
in
real life.
Well, not since the pandemic. We hung out in real life at another time.
Oh, come on, no.
Not since we've been doing the podcast.
We were filming something, so, and there were people around.
Yeah, that's true.
No. When we're going to be real friends when we hang out and we're stoned or drunk and are laughing. And I get cuddled by you, like you say you do with your male friends. I've never been cuddled by Matthew Dempsey, and I want that to happen.
Well, I mean, I don't know. You're pretty ageist at this point, so I'm not sure if I can cuddle you in good faith.
I can't be ageist. I'm okay. This is what's happening. In July, I turn 56. But what I do every year is, as soon as I turn that age, I start saying that I'm the age ahead. So I've been saying I'm 56 since I turned 55. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's something I've been doing
I'm turning 40 next year. It's a big year for me. Yeah. So it's always that milestone for me, that 9 year that I'm always like, okay, I'm the next decade. I'm prepared for 40.
40s are great. The 40s are fantastic. Everything great in my life happened in the 40s. Everything.
Yeah.
I got married. I bought a house. I had a kid. Everything great in my life. All the major stuff that I was ready for.
Yeah.
They said the 40s are where you demonstrate what you know.
Oh, I could see that. I could see that. Mm-hmm. I remember when I was probably about like in my early 20s, maybe 21 or 22. And I had an older friend who was like, you know, I think he was like 36, 37 at the time. And I asked him, I was like, what's been the best year for you so far? Like, of his 37 years, what's been the best age for you so far? And he said 30. And I said, why 30? And he goes, because you finally start to get a little bit of wisdom, but you also still have your youth. Like that, and that part for him was really important for him. And I remember him saying that, and it really stuck with me, that like the idea that you still need to maintain your youth in order for you to be enough. And I think that's like really typical for us in the culture that we have, because it's ageist. There's this this youth obsession that continues.
The 20s is your extended adolescence. Mm-hmm. I think the 20s, your front part of your brain is still developing.
Yeah.
And you're, you know, it's all of that jazz is happening. And then something happens at 30. I really like you kind of start to get serious in terms of I can't work at Book Soup anymore. I got to figure out what I'm going to do. Like everybody, like you can't. It's harder to live your way, because in your 20s, it's like anything can happen at any moment.
Right.
You could pick up. There's still you could fly to Europe at a moment's notice and. And there's a freedom to it. I think there's that decade kind of encourages experimentation.
Yeah.
And it's also the hottest you look. But I think I looked better in my 40s than I did in my 20s, just because I had more self-confidence.
Yeah. Well, but that's interesting though, right? The fact that there's like that conflict where you can kind of feel like, oh, you know, my 40s, yes, I had more confidence. I knew who I was and that's attractive. But your visceral response is 20s is hotter, right? Where does that come from? Like why is there such this obsession, would you say?
I think it's just the physical thing of a young body.
Right.
Like I scroll through Instagram right now and people in their 20s look like they're so young. To me.
Yeah.
And like when I worked pre-COVID, when I worked out at my gym, which is at a college, which was full of college students, the college students seemed like kids to me.
Yeah.
They just seem so young. But I think it's about the kind of invincibility of the cellular invincibility of a young body.
Yeah.
That you can put
true.
It through so much. And, you know, you can, I mean, Jesus, you got hit by a car. and you got up.
I'm That's obsessed true. With that I was story. 31 though. I don't know. It was kind of right on the verge. I don't know if I'd bounce back these days, but yeah, totally. No, but that's, I mean, just the, it's obviously just kind of the way that you look, the, you know, young and youthful and sprightly and can heal quickly if you get hit by a car. But there's also such a cultural and societal element to it too, you know? And I actually kind of did a little bit of a deep dive on this a while back.
And?
I was curious about the cultural reasons for it. And I mean, kind of in short, mostly, we didn't really have like a, we didn't have a real specific youth culture probably up until about like World War II and like the Great Depression, because there was this increased and heightened need for younger people to step up into kind of like adult roles and be taking care of certain things. And so youth culture became more of a prominent thing. Like there, it was a specific market for consumerism and for capitalism to hone in on. Huh. Yes. And so that happened. And then baby boomers happened. So then the youth market exploded. And then, you know, fast forward now to social media. And now social media is dominated by youth. And so the images that we're putting out there are all youth centric. So it's
TikTok
kind of like this evolution
like
of how I know. Look, it's all. But that's the thing is like all of these things are really popularized by young people who have the time, who have the means. And that's kind of what gets pushed out in terms of imagery and also in terms of like the market itself. So it's literally as a society, literally how we value age, how we value younger people. And so then that's kind of where this attention gets put. And so then as we start to move away from that specific market for ourselves, we literally start to feel like we're losing value. And that's kind of where internalized ageism comes from.
Huh.
Yeah.
But you know what? I like myself better now every year.
That's great.
I love myself more.
Okay, but what was the age for you where you started to feel like you started to kind of feel a little bit of angst, like I'm getting older, I don't like this, or started to feel nervous?
When I was 43, and that's 43, I had a full
really
on,
what was it? What was
happening? Crisis. I hired a trainer. I went on a starvation diet. I was just there was an internal sense of like I'm missing out. I'm going to miss out. Mm. Like it felt like a door was closing, like an elevator door was closing. And I was rushing to be a part of it.
Yeah. Missing out
and
on what?
I was also, I don't know. I was working with Atlantis at the time as a entertainer going on all those gay cruises.
Yeah. The cruise
And
ships.
I never kind of belonged to that club of like muscle gays. And I felt like this is my chance.
Yeah.
So I worked out like crazy. I lost all the weight. I got snatched. And then one year at the party, I think it was like 2009, I was in the middle of the ocean at a circuit party surrounded by hot guys. And I was like, I heard the thought in my head, I'm not one of these guys.
Right.
I'm good.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need to be one of these guys. Like, I'm in the middle of the party. I'm at the place where I thought I wanted to be. And I was like, I'm good. And that ended it.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think that's telling, right? Like even when you were talking about how you got to that certain age, which was 43 for you, where you felt like the door was closing for you to be a part of like the it crowd, right? And like the it crowd is really kind of like the height of privilege across the board, right? Being like, you know, cis male, white, young, like all able-bodied, like, you know, all these things. And when we realize that there's a cultural factor to that, about how we've been fed this kind of like bullshit through society that tells us what the gold standard is. And in this case, obviously, we're talking about youth culture and ageism. Mm-hmm. It tells us that if we're not young, then we're not as valuable. Right. And so even just having an awareness of that then gives us a consciousness that we can start to challenge that a little bit more, but also to normalize the fact that it's like it's normal for us to start to feel an angst like we're losing out on a privilege that we've had automatically. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's, I don't know. There's a certain degree of invisibility I've kind of been used to.
Yes.
I mean, culturally as a little Asian guy. Do you know what I mean? So I'm kind of like, it's not the biggest loss for me as I get older. And then I was talking to my therapist. I was like, you know, well, am I still going to get laid? Am I still going to get?
Right.
And he's like, He's like, what are you doing? What do you want to go out to a bar? Do you want to do that? Do you want to go to the Abbey? And I was like, no. And he's like, well, then what are you missing out on? What will you be missing out on? You know?
Yes, totally. And that's the dichotomy within us, right? The conflict right. that can happen too, where we want to feel like we're valuable, but we also want to make sure that we're valuing the parts of us that's authentic and not having to like lean on the bullshit that society tells us we have to be in order to be enough. Yeah.
That's what it is. I was valuing my authentic self, because when I did insert myself into that world, it was like going to Universal Studios where you see a facade and then you walk behind it. It looks like a building and you walk behind it and you see all, it's just balsa wood and sticks holding it up. That to me was that community. It was kind of like, you guys are really great on the outside. There's a lot of messed up stuff happening here. Not to put too fine a point in it. Yes. Don't email me that I'm being, you know, I'm painting everybody with the same brush. That was just my individual experience of that. Yeah. Well, listen, I value our guest today, and I'm so excited to have her on the program. We have the legendary international prostitute, the drag superstar, Sherry Vine, and we're going to talk to her after these messages.
Hey, all you true crime fans, this is Mike Ferguson.
And this is Mike Morph.
And we'd like to invite you to listen to our podcast, Criminology.
Launched in 2017, we've covered a variety of strange cases from murders to missing persons. Some of the cases are ones you may not have heard of.
Other cases we cover are some of the most historic in true crime. There are 200 episodes of Criminology available to binge on right now. And new episodes come out every Saturday night.
Subscribe to Criminology today, wherever you listen to your podcast.
We are really looking forward to our guest today. She's a drag legend who has been performing for over 30 years.
Make sure you check her out in the Sherry Vine Variety Show on Out TV and Apple Plus Premium. It's an awesome show, and I'm in the second episode because we're dear friends. Woo! Please welcome Sherry Vine.
Yay! Yay!
I just woke up. Good morning.
Do you remember when we met? Cherry?
No. I mean, I'm trying to remember. I mean, I knew who you were, of course, before we met. And I know that we kind of we clicked and became friends on a cruise that you were talking about earlier, on an Atlantis cruise, right? Yeah.
Yes.
But I don't remember if we met before that.
We met at Iowa Pride. We were the two headliners at Iowa Pride.
In Des Moines.
In Des Moines, Iowa. In
it
our
was
bathroom.
Des Moines Pride.
Our bathroom was a second floor of a building that just had a toilet in it in the middle of the room. And you had to, and the door didn't lock. So I was like, if I have to take a shit, I have to go to, I can't lock the door. And I have to, and I remember like going, all right, I really have to go to the bathroom. And so I pooed, but the entire time I was thinking somebody's going to walk in.
And then, that is the story of my life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Trauma.
And then the song that you did.
A toilet that doesn't lock where as a dressing room, that is literally my life.
And you performed, I did stand up, and then you sang a Gaga parody, which was based on
Bad Romance.
Bad Romance called I Shit My Pants. And I was like, I instantly fell in love.
That was a really great year. That was an amazing year. I'll never forget that year because it was right before Drag Race started. And that video was so big on YouTube that, I mean, I was literally booked in a different city every night for a solid year. And after performing for almost 20 years in drag, to kind of get this quote unquote overnight attention was really kind of remarkable. It was really fun, really fun. And then came along Drag Race.
And ended everything.
No, it did. It did not. But I was listening to your conversation, and it was fascinating. And I was really excited to be a guest today because I was like, oh, these are things that we never talk about. I never talk about.
That's what the show's about.
And in drag.
Yeah.
And so, and for someone who's older than all of you, I was like, oh, this is cool. I'm stepping out of my comfort zone. And so, yay.
Yeah.
Well, you totally. Are the it's elder interesting, states right?
Woman. Because we always talk about like at this point now too, we're talking so much about kind of privilege and marginalization and all that stuff. This is one area where we all have privilege at one point and then move into a marginalized place. So we all benefit from talking about it, but none of us really want to like talk about it. It's so interesting.
Yeah, and I think that there's certainly a different spin on aging for gay men as opposed to heterosexual men. I mean, there just is. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's very different. And then add that to drag on top of that. And when your character is, you know, the sex kitten, it's like, yeah. How long am I going to hold on to that?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. On aging, what are the major anxieties? Like for me, it's kind of like the feeling of, am I going to be excluded? Am I going to be, you know, marginalized? That's the fear for
yeah.
me.
Yeah, honey, absolutely. As a performer, I mean, I will just say everything that we're going to talk about today is under a huge umbrella of gratitude that I'm as old as I am, because yes. I have
me too.
Half of my friends that didn't make it to 30. So Everything that we're complaining about or talking about today is under an umbrella of gratitude.
Agreed.
I'm thankful to be, I just turned 57, which I usually never say out loud, but I'm like thankful for that. And like Alec, you mentioned earlier, I mean, I am genuinely happier today than I was when I was 27.
Me mm-hmm. too. Inside and out.
Totally.
Yeah. I think you made a great point, Sherry, because you were talking about, especially for us as gay men or in drag too, that the idea is that the reason that we can be valuable or we hang our hat up on so much of that kind of like the physical aesthetic of who we are is because we can make money off of it, right? Or because of the fact that we've especially as gay men, can carry a lot of shame within us from growing up marginalized in that way, that we project so much importance on the exterior stuff to try to give us a sense of value and that we matter. And that's kind mm-hmm. of been like our currency. So when we start to lose out on that, it feels like it's really stripping away the thing that has made us survive in life. And that's why there can be that like heightened anxiety.
Yes. I mean, I was, you know, horribly bullied. So certainly like, high school was the worst, most miserable time of my life. So I didn't enjoy that part. And then my 20s, college was the complete opposite. I had a good time in college. And you know, it just, there's like all these kind of different stages. But I mean, I think that I look and feel better now. I mean, there's of course things I don't like, but I think that mentally, spiritually, physically, I'm in better shape. You know, I don't do drugs. I don't smoke anymore. I drink moderately. I work out every day. So all mm-hmm. of those things, I certainly never did until I was 50.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Oh. Like, are you frozen?
I thought it froze for me.
Oh my God. I was like, what, did it just stop? Oh, did we just stop talking? Oh my God. Here's the thing. Here's Matthew, you're 39. Matthew was 39 years old. I'm 55. And this is what it's like at 55. I'm really kind of like, I don't want to do anything I don't want to do.
Yeah.
I say no to stuff all the time.
Yeah.
And when I don't say no, I'm like, God damn it. What am I doing here? You know, like I get more resentful of that. And also I'm thinking about like, I'm really thinking about quality of life. What do I want the rest of my life to look like? And that means, what do I need to let go of? Who do I need to forgive? What behaviors mm-hmm. and beliefs about myself do I need to unlearn? And that's all happening now. And so in a way, mm-hmm. biologically, I feel like I'm 30. Like I feel like I have a wisdom about me after going through my 20s. But I still feel like at 30, I felt like there were lots of possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
Like things are still possible. Things are, I mm-hmm. can still have dreams that to manifest. And, you know, certainly you, Cherry, I mean, you're headlining your own television show now. And it's dropping, and it's That's terrific.
There is this weird thing with drag where you're not, people do not assign an age to you when you're drag. Mm. Like you were talking about Matthew, like, oh, I didn't know you were 39. You know, like if you're out of drag, like just a man, you look at someone and you're like, how old are they? And you know what I mean? And people really don't do that with drag queens. You're just kind of ageless usually. but what I like the analogy of, I feel when people are like, what do you like or not like about getting older? And it's like, I think of it as like an onion. And as I get older, I peel away these layers of bullshit. It's like, oh my God, yes. I used to literally be the person, if a flight was delayed, I was the person at the counter screaming, and now I'm like, girl, the flight's delayed. I get a coffee and I sit down and read. I'm like, there's nothing you could do about it. Why are you get upset? So you just kind of peel away these layers of like, I don't need that in my life. I don't need that person in my life. And I love them, but they're not bringing me joy. It's more drama, whatever. Peel it away. Those things I love about getting older. And Alec, I agree. Like I just, it's easier to say, no, I don't think that's what I'm going to do that. And, diplomatically, I hope that you weren't talking about being a guest on my show. But
no, I wanted to be there.
But yeah, you just kind of peel away these layers. And then what I find most challenging about getting older is your body is revolting. And not like gross, but like staging a coup. Like I take this boxing boot camp class and I'm 20 years older than everybody. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I can do this. And then it's like, my body's like, fuck you, bitch. No, you cannot do this. I mean, last night I was watching Legendary on HBO with my roommate. And I literally was just like trying to be fierce. I was like, okur!
I got a creak in my neck for going okur! I threw my back out speaking gay.
Yeah, I threw my back out going okur!
But yeah, I remember in the 90s
they just announced that the TV show, I don't know if you guys remember this because this was kind of like from when I was a kid, but it was called Legends of the Hidden Temple, and it was this kind of like physical challenge like show that was on Nickelodeon.
Yeah.
And so they just announced that they're coming back with it, that they're revamping it, but it's going to be for adults. So basically if you watch it as a kid, now it's your time to like be on it again. And people were just like, nah, you missed your opportunity. My back hurts now. I can't do that shit.
Yeah. It's weird how TV is so, it just gets younger and younger. Jackie Beat and I have been watching Charlie's Angels, like binge watching Charlie's Angels.
Yeah.
And I Googled all of them. And you know what's fascinating? They were all 30 when they were cast in that show.
Wow.
Now 30 is not old, of course. But would CBS cast three 30-year-old women to play Charlie's Angels now?
Yeah, probably not.
No, they would be the moms.
Yeah.
Right.
They would be the moms.
Yeah, totally.
Would Olivia Newton-John be cast as Sandy in Grease now?
Yeah. we're talking a lot about, how aging and ageism can get internalized and affect us, how we feel about ourselves, all that stuff. But what about how we're actually treated and the differences that you notice from interacting with other people, you know, whether socially or on apps or anything like that?
Has there been a big difference that you've noticed? You're on a dating app. We always talk about it. Yeah,
and this is, I'm very open about it. I talk about it constantly. I don't give a shit. But I primarily only have sex with straight identifying men in drag. And that's because that's a different type of guy that I'm attracted to that I can get. But now it's also like, if I'm out of drag on Grindr, I might as well be the Crypt Keeper. Like, I could be on there for hours. I'm not going to be anybody's first choice. I'm just not. No, come on. Yeah. They're going for like 23, 24-year-olds, whatever.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And on my app, I'm the unicorn.
Yeah. Have you been on the app for a long time where you've noticed that as you've gotten older, there's been less and less?
Well, my profile does not age. I'm 40. I'm 41 on my app, and I get tons of. I mean, I actually am looking for like a 40-year-old man. You know, like I want Wolverine. I'm not into twinks, but I get hit up constantly by 23, 24-year-old guys. Like, oh my god, I want a cougar, and so they're kind of like,
But daddy.
I say I'm 41. And out of drag, I can't pull off daddy. Do you know what I mean? So, like, I think if you look at a 40, 50-year-old gay man who just looks their age, I think there's that's so fucking hot. Like, I love that. I can't pull that look off out of drag. I just look like a, you know, a middle-aged sissy. I'm not – I can't pull off daddy.
But you have a currency. You seem to have found your sexual currency on this app. And it's kind of like it doesn't seem like they – because they're straight identifying. They're not preoccupied with the same stuff that gay guys are. Do you think that's true?
Honey, like I said, you can – Jackie Beat is on it too. And it's like, oh, it's so nice being the unicorn. I mean, they just like want to worship you and you know, or abuse you.
I'd like that.
Get a wig, bitch.
I got to get a wig. I got to get a wig. The experience of that. Okay. Let's talk about this since we're here. Do you feel like when it's happening and you're in drag and you're having sex with somebody, do you feel like you're in a costume or is it feel like it's you having sex? Is it Sherry Vine having sex or is it you?
No, it's this weird kind of gray area in between the two, I would say. I mean, there are straight identifying men who want to bottom. And I'm like, girl, I didn't put all this on to top you. No. Like, that's an absolute no. So there's a lot, you know, you can't put all those men in one category either. There's some that are very comfortable with, they're like, that's what I like. You know, I'm not attracted to men, but I like dick or whatever. And then there's other guys that are just like, they just want to get their dick sucked. Like, they don't want to see you naked necessarily. Do you know what I mean? They're just like, oh, well, with you, I don't have to take you out to dinner and have a conversation. Can I come over and you're going to suck my dick? Sure. Okay. You know what I mean? So I think they like that. But I have met guys on there that I hook up with out of drag now because they're just like, I don't care.
Yeah.
They're probably like on the bi spectrum. Look, I think someone needs to do a documentary about this. It is like the frontier of sexuality that has not been explored.
Yeah. You know, I'm kind of interested about that actually, because, and this is in kind of in no way the exact same thing, but whenever, you know, if I'm out or I'm, you know, if chat with guys or go on dates and they know that I'm a therapist, it's this weird thing that I can sometimes tell that they get heavily interested in the therapist, Matt. And it kind of like fucks with me a little bit because I'm just like, are you here for the therapist or do you actually, are you actually interested in me? So I guess I'm curious for you, what's that like, you know, the, you know, Sherry Vine, the drag queen, as opposed to like who you are as a person? Does that ever mind fuck for you?
Absolutely, because I don't really... I mean, I've spent a lot of time soul searching this. Not even, I shouldn't say soul searching because it wasn't that big of a deal, to be perfectly honest. But I don't need a boyfriend. And I'm not saying that dismissively of like, well, I don't have one, so I don't need one. I mean, I really don't. I am fulfilled by my work. I have my friends. I can get laid. Okay. I don't, if it were to happen, great. I don't need one. I'm not
looking
for one.
That's a great place to be, by the way.
Oh, totally. The thought of going on a first date, I'd rather die alone.
Yeah.
And but in my 30s, I really wanted to date. And so I would go out on dates like out of drag and everything would be great. And I could tell they were into me or whatever. And then the minute that, oh, what do you do? Oh, I perform. Oh, what do you do? And I perform in drag. Goodbye. Done.
Wow.
And I think it has changed somewhat now because of Drag Race has kind of made it like cool to be a drag queen. Mm-hmm. But certainly 20 years ago, it was not. Even in the gay
toxic
community.
Toxic masculinity.
Totally. Even the gay men, like they love, they want to play with the drag queen, but they don't want to fuck a drag queen. And so I was like, well, I'll have sex with straight men.
Yeah.
But
totally.
Yes, that happened a lot.
I want to have sex with a straight guy now, Matthew. I think that would be interesting. I want to know what that's like.
Alec, I'm going to give you a wig and some lipstick. Yeah. That's all you need, honey.
Okay. That's all I need. But I haven't, like, the last time I had sex with a straight guy, it was, I was like the object of everybody's kind of homosexual panic in college. Because I was petite and I was androgynous and the bi-curious boys would come around and then they'd be like, oh, wow, this is really cool. But it's been a while since I've had that experience.
We'll like, convert even your just,
like,
garage.
Straight guys, yeah. I love, like, I used to be really afraid of straight guys because I was bullied by them when I was a kid.
Yeah, totally.
And now
totally.
I have more and more friends who are straight guys who are hilarious. Like the 2021 straight man is a different animal.
Well, yes.
They're
and
really
it's funny
kind of talking
that.
About their feelings and yeah.
I had that conversation last night because I told you I've been taking boxing boot camp. Well, I've walked by this place every day for like 2 years that I've lived here. And I was always like, oh, I would love to do that. I would never because I was scared of like, ugh, I don't want that toxic masculine testosterone energy.
Yeah.
And it was my roommate, Bruce, was like, let's do it together. And we went and I was like, yes, they're super straight, but they were all like the nicest fucking cool Harley Davidson riding guys. They're like, hey, good job. And like just like so cool.
Yeah.
And I love
where
that
were you when I was growing up?
Where were you when I was growing up? I wish that it was more like that. It's just like, why can't it just be like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Well, what we're talking about, like toxic masculinity, and especially when we're younger, I mean, just of course, like different generations, you know, obviously things are evolving, but still, even when you're younger, there's this idea of you have to be a certain way in order to be okay and whatever. I mean, even for me, I still have that aversion. Like I've got a neighbor and, you know, I live in an LA apartment, so like paper thin walls, and I've got a neighbor who's like a young 30 something, like straight guy, and he's a nice enough guy, but I hear him like hanging out and talking with his friends and just being like a bro. And I just like sometimes just like shiver just because of the fact that it's just this kind of like this like heterosexual energy that's coming through the walls. Yeah. But it's normal, especially for us, you know, getting bullied and feeling less than in contrast to that. It's hard.
It's yeah. I mean, I always kind of freeze up a little bit in those situations just out of a habit that won't break.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
Do you guys have any straight male friends? That's my question.
Totally. Yes.
Yes, I do. I have one. And it's because he's the twin brother of my gay friend.
I've always had straight male friends. And I think, Alec, it was exactly like what you were saying in high school. I was kind of like the bi, you know, I had sex with a lot of guys because... Mm-hmm. Like you said, I was kind of soft and femme and mm-hmm. safe.
Mm-hmm.
But I've had always had straight friends, and now I've got plenty of male, not plenty, but I definitely have male straight friends that are very good friends that I hang out with. They come to the shows, super cool. Mm-hmm. And I love that.
I think they're more vulnerable now, straight men, than when we were growing up. There's kind of a vulnerability to them. I mean, the straight men in my stratosphere, they're kind of like they're talking about their feelings. They're all therapized. There seems to be more empathy within that culture. I'm not saying toxic masculinity is over. I mean, with that, the evidence is otherwise. But I feel like the straight men that I'm coming into contact with have a softer side to them now.
Right. Plus, we are in Los Angeles in the entertainment industry.
Right.
And if you're straight in the entertainment industry, then you better not be homophobic. You're going to have a big problem. So we're not in, you know, fucking bumfuck Missouri or something where it might be a different story with the straight men at the boxing boot camp.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's a good distinction to make because of the fact that we live in a bubble. It's very kind of like, you know, city life. But also, I think it is fair to say overall, there's been a shift culturally. Like in our society, there's been a shift in how we're more open and we're trying to understand things a little bit more and we've got more insight. It's kind of like the Oprah effect. Like she's like really helped us to kind of start asking some of those questions and turn inward, which has been really great because it helps us understand, you know, our own internalized homophobia and internalized ageism and all that shit that can really weigh heavy on us and disconnect us from other people. But it's still there and it's something that we have to acknowledge and be able to, you know, kind of check so that we then can move through it.
Right. And I think I do credit RuPaul's Drag Race with opening that door some, because a lot of these straight guys have been drawn into watching Drag Race or going to a drag show because of their girlfriends and wives. And I think that maybe they're just like, oh, this is fun. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you go to a drag show of, especially for McQueen that's been on RuPaul's Drag Race, the audience is, the minority is gay men.
Yeah. Definitely.
It's women.
And it's, so, I mean, it's just so powerful. Obviously, you know, I was just actually, I, you know, there was that whole kind of like out on TV, like, you know, kind of 5-part docuseries or whatever that came out a couple of years ago. I actually only just watched it this past week and I was like loving it. And it was so amazing and so incredible in so many ways. And one of the things that stood out to me was just talking about how much just entertainment, obviously TV and entertainment just gets to put it out there and has such an impact on culture. And especially when it can be done with humor, like it's not trying to like make a point or have a, like a real clear message on, you know, progressive, but you know, being able to just, you know, entertain, that shifts culture so much.
Yeah. And RuPaul's our age now, right? Isn't she like late 50s? Is how old
RuPaul's
is she?
60.
She's
60. She turned 60 last year. She'll be 61 this year.
I'm going to be 60 in 4 years. And I know that's going to go by. And I've been thinking about it a lot. And I think when I really think about it, I think that here's the thing. I don't place, my currency has never been sexual. I've always been the funny friend or an entertainer or comedian. So that my currency, I've never had to be like, a supermodel. Joan Collins said that being a beautiful woman and aging is like slowly going broke because that was her currency.
Right.
And
right,
I feel like my currency as a human being is as a partner to my husband, as a father to my son, as a friend to everybody in my community, as an activist. Like, I feel like there's so many things that make me valuable. And that's why I'm less freaked out about getting older. I think that if it was just about looks, then I understand the anxiety of men who are getting older, who are freaked out by that.
Yes. I totally agree 100%. I mean, I think that I've established myself as a comedy queen, not a look queen. You know, I'm not one of those Instagram queens that's just only a look.
Right.
So I'm not too concerned. I do kind of think like any day now I'm going to wake up and be like, it's time to retire the sex kitten and let's move on to Cougar, you know, and kind of embrace that. But I'm fine with that. I'm not scared of that. I think as I approach 60, the main thing that I think about more than how I look is how I feel. Like I always kind of, I want to treat my body as an athlete and I just want to be in shape, not just aesthetically, but I want to feel good and I want to be 80 and still be mobile, which is why I keep this up. I see like my mom who's uses a walk. She's perfectly healthy, but needs a walker and everything because she never did any kind of movement. And so I'm just trying to like preemptively battle that.
Yeah.
And that's why I work so hard physically. So that's the only thing that I get kind of like, oh, am I going to slow down? Am I going to really not be able to travel the way I do because I need more sleep or, you know?
Yeah, because I didn't work out a lot during the pandemic. I've just started to work out earnestly in the past couple months. And at this age, you lose so much. I lost so much strength so quickly. I can't not exercise. Well, Matthew, what's your part of this? I mean, you're a supermodel.
No, I'm not a supermodel. But I mean, listen, like I've gotten attention through my life because of how I look and, you know, for sex and things like that. And I'll be honest with you, there is a part of me that does get nervous about getting older and losing that kind of, you know, that privilege or whatever, because it is easy to kind of buy into the bullshit of that as if like that's anything that actually does make me matter. But, you know, so kind of in the ways that we're talking about self-care and ways that you can make sure that you're kind of getting ahead of things and taking care of yourself in real ways, whether it's physically or otherwise, for me, that's why I've invested myself so much into, you know, psychotherapy, because that's my passion. That's the thing that I care about. And that's the thing that is an investment into who I am authentically, an expression of who I am authentically. So that's kind of like an investment that's worthwhile, because if I'm just only investing into how I look and posting selfies all the time on Instagram, it's like, you know, it's like buying stock in Blockbuster. It's like, what the fuck, you know? So it's like, right. You gotta invest wisely.
Oh, I never heard it put that way before.
And something meaningfully too, yeah.
Buying stock in Blockbuster. That's what it is. It's an empty investment.
MySpace.
Okay.
Yeah.
We got to wrap it up. But my thing is like, I remember in the 90s, this one night where I was getting ready to go out and I was agonizing over what to wear. And I was like, what am I going to wear in order to be noticed, in order to be fuckable, in order to be desirable? Yeah. And I was like, that is like, I would never, like now, at this age, I'm fearless. I go out. I talk to everybody. I'm not worried about what I'm wearing. I'm not agonizing over how I look. It's just better to be. There's so much more assets at this age, I believe. And anyway, that's me. I'm happy. I'm going to be 56 in July.
I think that's a beautiful way. And really the only healthy way to kind of age gracefully. I mean, I see men, gay men, especially my age, where I'm like, honey, you're not fooling anyone. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so it's like, embrace it.
What are you trying to tell me?
This is an intervention, Alex. You know, I think that, you know, if I see someone who is just like a handsome 50-year-old man, as opposed to someone who's a 50-year-old man, but they think maybe they're presenting as 25, and it's like,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Like trying to cling to youth as if that's their only
currency. Yeah, I mean, I say that meanwhile I'm dyeing my hair and getting Botox and everything, but you know. That's because I'm not ready to invest in new headshots with white hair.
I don't, it's sex. Also sex with older people is better. They know what they're doing. That's what I'm finding.
Skill.
You don't know what I'm going to stop you. You don't know what you're doing. I'm going to stop you.
There's something to be said about both, but there's something really fun about hooking up with someone that's like, oh, I've never done this before.
Yes. The novelty.
Let mama show you the ropes.
I'm so curious. Yeah. We're going to school. Listen, I want to talk about that at length, but we're at the end of the program, and we always end the program with a hot message. And given your worldly wisdom and your television star and your forthcoming about your age, what's your hot message for all of your fans today?
Get the money first. Okay. No, I'm just kidding. just embrace who you are. Love who you are, because it's going to be a lot easier than trying to be who you aren't.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I love it. Where can people find you on your socials? Sherry Vine.
Instagram, Miss Sherry Vine. But if you go to sherryvine.com, it literally has links to all the socials, all the shows that are finally coming back and happening. And there's a whole new special section when you first get on my website, sherryvine.com. That's all the info and links for the Sherry Vine Variety Show premiering May 25th.
Watch the Sherry Vine Show. Watch Sherry Vine live. You're a wonderful entertainer and a great, great friend. And thank you for being on the program today.
Thank you. Yeah, I thank adore you. And Matthew, it's so nice to meet you. And you're going to so be nice a meeting hot you fucking 50-year-old man. Don't even worry.
Yeah, don't even worry about it. You're going to get all the daddy action. That's going to be nonstop. Are you my daddy? Like, nonstop.
I love you guys.
Love you.
Thank you, Sherry.
Bye, baby.
Matt.
Yeah.
I think you're going to get, I'm looking forward to you being older. I think you're just going to get better and better because you're so cool now. Like, just think you're, you have so much empathy and you're so educated and you're so curious about people.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you take ownership in like your own stuff. So I think that the evolution of Matt Dempsey is going to be amazing as long as you don't get hit by another car.
Well, thank you. That is high, high praise. And I guess if I could fold that into my hot message for the day, it's just to say that, you know, I was fortunate that I grew up in a household where I was loved and accepted for who I am, even as a gay person. And so it was, so I had the fortune of being able to feel a little bit more positively about who I am authentically and made a very active conscious choice to invest into the things that actually make me light up in a real way. And those are the kind of investments that we wanna, you know, that we wanna give to, because otherwise, you know, for a lot of us, we didn't have a whole lot of support. We didn't really have a world around us that told us it was okay to be who we are. And so it's easy for us to cling on to the exterior things as some sort of measure of our worth and our value. And of course, that's bullshit. That's not true. But it can be hard to let that go. But at least having an awareness of that can help us maybe, you know, center ourselves and check in on what do I want to do? What are the things that excite me? And invest into those things, because those are the things that will carry you through all the ages of your life with grace.
And on that note, I would say don't compare your insides to people's outsides, you know?
Yes.
You have no idea what anybody's going through. And I did that for years. I would compare my insides to people's outsides constantly. But I, what you said, piggyback, because you're big. Find out the things that light you up. I think that's part of the journey in loving yourself, is kind of like surrounding yourselves with people and situations that light you up. And I did not grow up with a lot of the support that you had. And my journey of self-love has been hard won, but it's worth it.
Yeah.
You're worth it. Where can we find you on your socials, big boy?
You can find me at MJ Dempsey Psych on Instagram, Twitter, and Matthew J. Dempsey Psychotherapy on Facebook.
Like it never gets old. Every time I call you big boy, you giggle like a little girl.
Because now it's got like new meaning, because now it's our little key little banter.
You can find me at Alec Mappa on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also listen to me at the RuPaul Official Podcast, wherever podcasts are sold. If you're new to the program, download and subscribe. And if you've been listening, thank you so much. We want to hear from you.
Yeah.
DM us at Stage29 Productions or on our Twitters, and we'd love to hear from you. Tune in next week, and we'll have more Hot Mess Fun. Goodbye.
Bye, guys. This podcast has been produced by Stage 29 Productions for entertainment purposes only. The contents of this podcast does not constitute medical or professional advice, do not reflect the opinions of this company, any of its parent companies, affiliates, subsidiaries, promotional sponsors, or advertising agencies. The views expressed by the hosts and guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. For more information, please go to stage29.tv.